Hey guys, welcome to Emotionally Immobile, where we learn to thrive and not just survive. I'm your host, Kayla.
And I'm Natalie.
All right, today we're going to be talking about cognitive distortions. And for you guys that don't really know what those are things that we oftentimes tell ourselves in moments where we're having a panic attack, an anxiety attack, when we're losing kind of touch with reality. We tend to catastrophize, do the all or nothing, black and white thinking. I think you guys get what I'm talking about. So we're going to be talking about some of those, what they look like, as well as how we can help ourselves when it comes to navigating those. So, happy, happy April. I feel like it's crazy how it's already it's springtime before we know it. It's going to be like summertime. I don't know. Time's moving really fucking fast. So, but
times are changing.
Times are a changing. I know, Kay, you wanted to talk about kind of, you had like a very like personal experience that happened this past weekend, that kind of brought this up, and you were like, man, this is like so much of, this happens so much in my life, and this happens, you know, so often. And we oftentimes, I feel like, look past it because it's so normalized, you know, talking to ourselves poorly or negatively, or, you know, being our own harshest critic. It's become very normalized. So if you want to kind of jump in and kind of talk about your experience, I can also jump in and talk about mine, but let's start with the vulnerable stuff first.
Yeah. So I've been writing some blogs about cognitive distortions. And like you said, there's so many. I feel like there's actually about 15 or so. Yeah. And so, of course, writing about it and reading about it, it's kind of in the forefront of my mind. And then I went to yoga a couple days ago, maybe 2 days ago. And I don't know what it was. It was a combination of things, right? Like, I just woke up already kind of in a weird mood. I meditated. I did everything that I normally do. But then I went, and I think it was more of a combination of, I didn't eat enough that morning. And for me, and this was actually something I didn't even acknowledge or realize until maybe last year, was that when I have low blood sugar, it mimics a lot of the symptoms of my anxiety. And so I get shaky. I get that kind of brain fog. I'm like very quick and snappy. Yeah. And now I've been able to recognize like, oh, okay, I've only eaten, you know, I think I had a granola bar that morning, which is definitely not enough to go to like a hot yoga session. So I do that. And then I go get a decaf coffee, but sometimes they mess up and they don't give you decaf, which I think is what happened. So I'm like, in the middle of class. Oh no, actually this was the next day. So it basically happened to me twice in a row. But the day I told you, I drove to yoga class and I got there and I realized I forgot my purse, which has my medication in it. And for anybody who doesn't know, I get pretty severe panic attacks. And so I carry my medication with me because for me, especially when I'm driving, it's obviously dangerous to be passing out or, you know, anything like that. So I just carry them with me because I never know, you know, what kind of situation I'm going to be in. So I forget my purse completely. But they're kind of, you know, it's a comfort blanket too. Just knowing that they're there. And so I was like, all right, I'm not feeling great that they're not here, but I'm super close to home. Okay, it's fine. I need to get into class. If I'm any later, they're not going to let me in. So I was already like heart rate increased, not feeling great. I kind of grounded myself in the car, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to push myself through. So I get into the class. The teacher knows. I talked to all my teachers beforehand about my anxiety, which I feel is very helpful. If you have anxiety.
Yes.
For me, it kind of breaks down some of that shame barrier. Also lets them know what's going on, you know. So if I'm, you know, leaving class, they're not like, what the heck? Or, you know, I'm not being disruptive on purpose. But I get into class and then the brain fog sets in and I just kind of start to
go into what I like to call an adrenaline overload, because I feel like it almost takes away some of the power of the panic attack, mm-hmm. rather than I'm not being attacked by something, but I'm like, okay, you know, this is physiologically what's happening to my body. But I start to go into one. I step out of the class. I have my ice pack that I bring with me. I cool myself down. You know, I'm able to work through it. And so yeah. I go back into class, but I just can't shake this brain fog. And the whole point of going to yoga is so I can get out of it. So I ended up leaving again because I was just like, I can't be present. And I'm at that point, my body was just kind of like not there.
Yeah.
So I left and I went home and I immediately went into bed because I was like being so self-critical in that moment of like, you know, doing the overgeneralization of like, you are a failure. You should have, you know, the shoulds, you should have stayed, you know, you could have handled it, you know, all of that mean voice in my head telling me like everything that I did wrong. And then I kind of, because I had this awareness, because I had been reading about, you know, the cognitive distortions and going, okay, wait, pause.
Yeah. You
know, what actually happened and what is just my feeling right now? And I had to talk myself down and I did some positive affirmations and reminded myself like, I am safe. I am strong. I did the best that I could. I did push myself, but in that moment I pushed myself and I was at my limit in that moment. And so I left and that's okay. You know, it's still possible to go and have the day, you know, the rest of the day be good. And, you know, it took a little while, you know, to kind of believe. And I kept having to literally say the affirmations over and over and over. But it was good for me, I think, to just have that awareness and be like, and remind myself that just because I have a feeling or a thought doesn't make it true.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, first and foremost, I think like one thing that you mentioned that is very powerful is you took that first step, like prior to even the panic attack happening, you had the courage to step out of a class where I know that there's probably other people. There are people that are, you know, doing poses.
Yes, they're like, don't leave class. Don't, you can do anything, but don't exactly. leave. That's like the one thing.
You know? And like, you're over here just like choosing yourself, which I think that that's an action that we should really focus in on and yes. show how empowering that was for you to choose yourself, despite having, you know, so many people around you, or despite the teacher, you know, continuing to do class, despite people looking at you walking out, like that takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of bravery to do that, especially also in a quiet room, like a yoga room. I mean, like that to me is, I feel bad when I go to the bathroom and during,
right? Yoga, I'm like, you can't leave.
Exactly.
No matter what.
Yeah, and then the door opens and it's creaky and everybody's like looking at you and I'm just like, oh, stop it. I'm going to pee myself. Okay. I can't.
Exactly.
So like one, I wanted to, you know, notice that because I think it's, you know, we're focusing ultimately, we put a lot of focus and a lot of emphasis on like how it is that we took care of ourselves or what reactions we had after we had a panic attack. But you did so much prior to even having the panic attack that you tried to ground yourself and you tried to manage it and you tried to, you know, accept the reality. Like when you were in the car and you're like, okay, I forgot my purse. Like, what am I going to do? There's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to walk in. I already got myself here, which was stressful enough. Like we don't focus in on how many actions that we did prior to the panic attack that were already there as like helpful actions. Yes. And so all we do is we focus in on after we have that panic attack and we're like, we could have done that and we could have done this and we could have done that. And I'm just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, but like we did everything that we could have done. We took that step out. We made it awkward and we, you know, we got ourselves out of a situation that we were, you know, kind of uncomfortable in. Like we did enough actions to choose ourselves. Just sometimes our body overrides our mind and we can't necessarily be mad at that because that is being we're basically invalidating our body signals, right? Our somatic signals. Yeah. And I had a very similar experience. Actually, it happened yesterday. And for me, a lot of the time, mine is sensory overstimulation. So it's an easy example. Like, let's say you have the windows open, you're sitting in your room and you start hearing the cars that are passing by, an ambulance passes, the dogs are barking, a child is screaming or laughing outside. Then you notice that, you know, your Roomba turned on because whatever, and it starts running around the house. All of those little stimulations, all of that stuff that your sensory system is picking up on and is aware of, I get very easily, like, I feel like a cup and somebody's pouring water into it every single time. And then I start to overflow. And the more that there are like stimulations around me, the more the faster my cup fills up. And I'm like, oh my God, I literally can't take this anymore. And I have to almost like go into a quiet space so that there isn't any, you know, stimulation basically. And I can just kind of bring myself down. And so yesterday it was a perfect example of that. My partner was watching something on the computer. I was trying to write a grocery list. The windows were open. Somebody was grilling. There was an ambulance that went by. Dogs were barking. And I just started to feel like my entire cup was overflowing. Mm-hmm. And I felt in chest the tightness. And then I also felt that I started to clench my jaw, which is a very big signal for me that I am uncomfortable. And I started to pick at my skin, at my nails, because that is another thing that I've started to pick up on, different things that I try to do to self-soothe. And like, we might not think that clenching our jaw or picking at our nails or massaging our hand or squeezing our fingers is, you know, self-soothing, but it is. Like, we are trying to orient ourselves back to our body because we're finding ourselves so dissociated. And so I've started to look at that and stop shaming that, like clenching my jaw or picking at my, you know, the skin around my nails or whatever. And I stopped judging it. And I said, okay, I'm obviously really stimulated. I'm doing three of these things instead of just one of them. And I could also feel like I couldn't really catch a breath. And I just like walked away from the table. The bathroom is literally my safe space. And so I literally like went into the bathroom. I sat on the cool floor and I just like sat there and I just started to stare at a blank wall. And I kept telling myself like, it's going to pass. It's going to pass. It's going to pass. Started to listen into the silence in the bathroom because that's what I was really missing in the moment where I started to feel overwhelmed. And I think that was the first time in my life I didn't necessarily, I think, immediately go into catastrophizing or magnifying, which is another, you know, cognitive distortion where you exaggerate things or you blow them out of a proportion, like the saying, like making a mountain out of a molehill, that's like magnifying. And I do that a lot where I'm just like, oh my God, I had this. That means that like, it was another horrible panic attack and I'm not going to be able to like, you know, get out of this. And, you know, I'm almost 30. Like, how the hell am I doing that? You know? And I start to magnify it and I minimize all of the actions that I tried to do prior to that. You know, I try to like fortune tell, which is one of those like cognitive distortions. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to be able to do this when, you know, if I ever have a kid,
right?
Like,
my imaginary child and I,
yeah,
my going to be able to go on walks.
Exactly. You know, they're going to be crying and I'm just going to run into the bathroom. Like, how am I going to do this? So, and I just sat there and that was, I think, you know, I had those moments, I had those brief thoughts kind of zoom past, especially the kid one, because I think I'm very harsh around being a parent, being a future parent, because I want to be the best that I can be for my kid. And, you know, I can say very confidently that I'm very harsh around things that I want to heal prior to becoming a parent. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my God, like another one of these things that I have to fix. And then I just sat back and I was like, you can fix it. Or if it doesn't happen in time, you can show that you are trying to work through it if you happen to have a kid, right? Like showing and telling and modeling, those are the ways that a kid learns, right? So we don't have to be done with our healing to be able to be beneficial to other people. And that was just something also that I wanted to point out, even for you, like you had that experience, right? And of course you probably felt like, damn, you know, it's like two steps back. At the same time though, that probably also brought you closer in terms of like being vulnerable around people who also experience the exact same thing and who are like, okay, but I'm just starting out in my journey and I don't even know where to start. And you're like, yeah, I've been doing this for however many years and I still struggle with it. So stop being hard on yourself, right? Like you have that experience to be able to connect, you know, empathize, mirror, all that sort of stuff. So yes, it happens, but it also gives you, I think in a weird way, it connects you even more to just the humanity of it all.
It does. And I think in those moments too, like obviously we have our partners who are supportive, but they're not always there. Like I texted Shane, my partner, when it was happening, cause I have our car and I was like, hey, is there any way that you can like Uber over and bring me my purse? And he was just like, no, I'm on back-to-back calls. So it was like, I was like on me own. and it was like, fuck. But it also shows me, you know, like you said, I've been experiencing these on and off for more than 10 years. And I go through phases where I'm more self-critical and I have more cognitive distortions and I kind of get almost into like a lull, but I believe in kind of the ebbs and flows of like the universe and also of my anxiety. And right now I'm kind of, you know, still in an ebb, you know, with COVID and just with everything happening in the world. And I think giving ourselves grace rather than, like you said, looking back and going, oh my gosh, I'm almost 30. Why do I not have this under control? Why is this not gone and healed and, you know, checked off on a list of things that I've already handled? But, you know, I don't think any of us expected the last 2.5 years to happen. And so I feel like instead of pigeonholing ourselves, I try and remember the circumstances that we're in and give ourselves grace and understanding. And it also, it showed me that even in what felt like a worst case scenario in that moment, I was able to push through and drive myself home. And I was exhausted afterwards, but I did do it. And so it was kind of, however angry I was at the situation, I did realize, okay, well, you know, it was my fault for leaving the purse. It wasn't Shane, because I tried to blame him for, why couldn't you come? And then just realizing, you know what, it's going to happen. You know, like there's going to be circumstances that put me in the situation. I'm going to be triggered, but I know how to handle it, however uncomfortable it is. Like you said, I'm going through the motions and without even realizing, I'm like, you know, it's hard for anybody outside to understand because having a panic attack doesn't look like anything from the outside, you know, to the bystander. I'm just like you said, this chick keeps getting up and they probably think I'm like taking a phone call, like an asshole or something, you know, which like people Pilates do all the time. But it's also not an environment where that's the one thing that they ask you to not do. Please don't leave the room. Which in itself, like automatically already gives me anxiety. Cause I'm like, oh man, can't leave. I'm trapped. But I also do it to expose myself. Cause that was one thing that I really took away from DBT and CBT therapy is like, I have to always be challenging myself and doing something that makes me a little bit uncomfortable, that makes me a little bit scared. Yeah. To remind myself that I can push myself and I can get farther than I want to, because like you said, maybe we're not where we want to be, but if we look back at where we were 3 months ago, 6 months ago, et cetera, I go, wow, like I am way farther. Sure. I'm not, you know, free of my anxiety like I have been in the past, but I'm taking all of my circumstances into consideration and Now I can do a lot of the things that I couldn't do 6 months ago, or I'm doing them without thought. So we have to give ourselves kudos.
It's kudos. It's also the notion of, I think it's called in psychology, like cataloging, your inner rules. I think that's what it's called. I have to go back through my like worksheets and whatnot, because I remember doing them one time with a client in session, and it was even like eye-opening for me. I'm thinking about this right now, because a lot of the time our cognitive distortions, so the magnifying, the, you know, the blaming, the minimizing, the fortune telling, the black and white thinking, all that stuff, they're rooted in like assumptions and rules that we have for ourselves that we just decided to like live by.
Yeah.
You know, we were like, yeah, well, I'm going to live a life where I'm never going to have a panic attack. Right. Or I am going to be constantly, I'm going to be the lady that has inner peace always and is giving light and love to everybody. Like that, like when did we like come up with that rule? Like who gave us that rule? Who convinced us that that's a rule that we have to live by? Like what character are we trying to play? That is just really, you know, at the end of the day, like sometimes these rules or assumptions that we have, like though they may help us stick to our values, like being light and love and being, you know, peaceful and mindful, they often can limit us, and they can also frustrate us, and they can also cage us. And occasionally they can, I think sometimes to a degree, they can kind of like exaggerate the panic or the anxiety that we may have in that moment. Because that has happened to me where, you know, I'm sitting amongst people and I have recognized over the years, like, what are my triggers? And a lot of the time it's the somatic feelings that I feel in my body. Like if I have an itchy shirt and it is really like that itchy wool kind of fabric, and I'm sitting among people, like, you know, it doesn't even matter what those people are talking about. It can be extremely like triggering like content. For me though, I'm so focused on my body being so uncomfortable that I literally create like the panic in and of itself is like just increasing by how uncomfortable I'm becoming, like aware of how uncomfortable my body is. And then when I tune into the situation that might be even like triggering around content that people are talking about or how loud they are, then that like extrapolates that. And then comes the whole, you know, like, how do I get out of this situation without anybody noticing? And those rules where it's like, okay, yeah, but what's the rule that you can't ever have, you can't ever be uncomfortable around people? You have to always be, you know, easily understood and convenient. Like, where did that come from? Where did I learn that? And why am I setting that as a rule? What do I think it's going to communicate? Am I, you know, a person that's going to be pleasing to be around? And if I am inconvenient and not, you know, the most easy to understand, that people are not going to like me? Is that what I'm trying to tell myself? Like the story of it? So I think one thing that I try to do for myself is after those moments, after that, you know, panic attack or that anxiety attack where I engage in any of these like cognitive distortions, I try to root myself in the lesson that is, what rules was I trying to live by, right? That were in a way limiting me in that moment that I still have to learn to kind of walk away from and distance myself from, because they can be great for values that I want to live by, but they do not have to be like, they don't have to limit my human experience.
Absolutely. It's such a good point. I mean, I think for me, a lot of it is my perfectionism.
Yeah.
But then also for me, as somebody who has been in long-term recovery and who has done more traditional programming, you know, I was taught that taking any kind of medication meant that I wasn't really sober. And so I had to unlearn and really dive in with my psychiatrist, who obviously prescribes me these medications. And she is somebody who is, you know,
highly trained in and is the one who should be giving me my medical advice, right? But I had to unlearn everything I learned in traditional programming that told me, if you take this, you're not really sober, you know? So unlearning that over years and years, because I remember one time right when I got out of rehab and I was having like an absolute meltdown, also because I was like, you know, still detoxing, but I refused to get on the plane. And so rather than getting on the plane and going from North Carolina to California, I don't even remember if it was to go back to treatment or just to go be with family, because it was such a time in my life where like the timeline is so blurry.
Yeah.
But I remember getting on the plane and I was just so anxious, and I was like that person. I was like, nope, I can't do it. And this woman is like, I have a Xanax. Like, do you want? I was like, absolutely not. I cannot take that. I am sober, you know, like, and instead of getting on the fucking plane, my dad, who was living in Germany, had to fly from Germany and come out and get my car. And we had to drive all the way from North Carolina to California because I could not get on. Or actually, maybe I didn't even have a car. I think it was a rental, but you know what I mean? Like, it was this massive deal rather than just taking the fucking meds and pushing myself and getting through it. All because I had this belief in which I don't actually believe anymore, you know?
Well, yeah. And then that brings up the almost like the exercise, I guess we can call it, of honestly like harnessing the awareness of whether it's a fact or whether it's just merely opinion, right? Because like we're talking about basically you saying, well, I'm not going to be sober if I take a Xanax to get on a plane so that I can get home and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I can go see my relatives or I can go back to like treatment or whatnot. And like that to me right there is like, are you actually though not going to be sober? Cause like, I thought we're talking about sober from a certain substance. I'm not talking about a character generalization right over here. So that's an opinion right there that you think that you're not going to be sober because you're going to take Xanax. Is that a fact? No, not at all. It's an opinion. You're still going to be sober from the thing that you struggle with. You're not allowing your anxiety to stand in the way of you accessing your future self, right? And lose touch with that. And we say, okay, well, we're just going to be extremely judgmental of this current self. And we're going to harness so much opinion around this current self and the better actions that it could be doing. Not focusing on like, yeah, but are we also limiting ourselves from accessing our future better self, right? The self that we're actually trying to work toward. Like, it would probably be better if I would just get on the fucking damn plane and like get back to treatment, right? It would make it faster for me to work on my future self. But we think and we hone in on this one detail that we're like, no, our current self is going to be bad for doing this one thing. Like, that's an opinion though. That's not a fact. Go ahead.
Oh, well, just, it reminds me of just the binary thinking of a lot of traditional programs. And then on top of that, just sobriety and what does that look like? And that is the black and white thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Most definitely. So I think the take home message over here is that these things are going to come up, you know, like patterns of thinking that are irrational, or, you know, we can call them extremely emotionally rooted, are just, they're going to happen. There's nothing that we can do to stop them. We're not robots. And thank goodness that we're not. I think having the mindset of learning rather than being immediately thrusted into this almost like consequential kind of perspective where it's like, oh, I had this panic attack. Now here's the consequence from it. Like rather shifting our perspective a little bit more and saying, okay, what can we learn from this about ourselves? What have I not given myself grace around? Maybe what is it that I am not focusing in on a trigger that maybe I'm saying, oh, you know what? I'll get over this. I'll get over this. This isn't that big of a trigger. But in reality, maybe it is. Yeah. So I think, one, notice those cognitive distortions, because I think the more we notice them, the less scary they become. It's like that monster under the bed. You got to look under the bed for you to be able to say like, oh, never mind, there's not a monster. It's just something in my imagination. Cognitive distortions are the same thing. It's something that your imaginary mind is just creating a story around. And mm-hmm. so the moment that you look at them and you just like peek under them and you're like, oh, bro, yeah, you're actually not that real. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, they like-
You're a sock.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like, you're all in my imagination. But no, really, it is taking the time just to harness that awareness around what it is that, what are common cognitive distortions, and then doing things to challenge them. Ask yourself, what are the rules that I'm trying to live by? Is this a fact or opinion that I'm like putting, you know, on top of this as a layer and viewing it from that lens? You know, how can I challenge myself to, you know, kind of restructure these statements and use them as like motivational, right? Being like, okay, well, yeah, I had a panic attack in this moment, but I also acknowledge that I stepped out of class, and that's a really big thing for me to do that in amongst other people. So I'm going to give myself props to that. And I'm going to work on making sure that I take my bag, you know, from home. Yes. Like, we can restructure that, and we can look at that as like, we can say that to ourselves without being like, oh, I'm shit human for, you know, exactly, just doing a yoga experience. Like, bullshit. We still learned something out of it that we got to remember to take our bag. So maybe let's just set an alarm next time before we go to yoga to remember to take our bag, because it's our safety item, you know, like, yes. And that's okay. And no judgment around that. So yes, that's ultimately what it is. I think it's peeking under the covers at these cognitive distortions and in a way fostering acceptance that we are always going to have a negative bias towards ourselves. But rather than negative, let's kind of lean towards neutral. How can we say something that is neutral toward ourselves rather than negative?
Well, and I was reading about, and I found this really cute exercise that I think goes perfectly with this topic, which is every time you have like a negative or critical thought about yourself, or a moment where you're catastrophizing, or you're having a I should have done this, I ought have done this, take some sticky notes, or, you know, cut out some fun shapes with some cardboard and write down the cognitive distortion on one side, and then on the flip side, challenge that with a compassionate thought instead, a compassionate statement. And so it's something you can go back to too, because for a lot of us, it's a pattern of thinking, right? I don't just have mm-hmm. this thought once. This is a thought that I probably think daily, if not, you know, circumstantially, every time I go to yoga, or every time I, you know, make an attempt to go out to a social event. And so the point of having these little myself when I'm having this specific thought or this specific, you know, cognitive bias, cognitive distortion, flip that script, flip that sticky note, look at the other side and remind yourself of the fact, or remind yourself of that compassionate thought and reground yourself. So that was just kind of a fun exercise that I had read about online when I was doing the research, and anybody can do it. You know, I think everybody has sticky notes at home. So,
and if you don't, get some, they're really fun.
Exactly.
No, but I definitely agree with you. If you have that, if you have access to it, even if you're, you know, at work, I would just say like, jot those cognitive distortions that commonly run through your brain, just survey them. Right. And then when you get home, you know, you can press pause during the workday and say, I'm going to get to you later, you know, and then when you're at home, take a look at those, at those cognitive distortions and look at them with fresh eyes and be like, did I make sense when I was saying this? Because I can promise you they're going to have a different, if you just allow yourself to have a little bit of space from immediately judging those distortions, you're going to be able to look at them with a far more compassionate eye.
All right, that's time. We're at our end. Thank you guys for listening. If you're still here, be sure to follow us at Emotionally Immobile at our Instagram. The email for podcast questions is in the bio, so make sure to submit your cues down there. And as always, please like, comment, subscribe, all the good things. We'll see you next week.